Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, and now Dante Wright. Their deaths all began with a traffic stop. When Wright, a 20-year-old black man, was shot and killed just outside of Minneapolis earlier this month, he had been pulled over for an expired car registration. His death has once again put the spotlight on these pretext traffic stops, which studies show disproportionately affect communities of color. NPR's Eric Westervelt has been reporting on these stops and efforts to reimagine traffic enforcement, and he joins us now. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Tanya.
Can you start by explaining how these routine traffic stops can escalate into something like a deadly police shooting?
Sure. I mean, to take a step back, I mean, police traffic stops, they've really been these potential flashpoints for decades. In the case of, you know, Dante Wright, after the traffic stop, police tried to arrest him for an outstanding warrant on two misdemeanor charges. You know, he ended up shot and killed when he tried to run away. So there's enormous fear surrounding these stops, and police have enormous power over people during these stops. And again, it's something, you know, civil rights and civil liberties groups have criticized for years as, you know, just thinly veiled racial profiling that quickly turns into a broader search. So a relatively minor car infraction, maybe a failure to signal, maybe a broken taillight, a cracked windshield, an expired tag, even a loud muffler, you know, can become this fishing expedition to search for drugs or guns or an old warrant. And, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, study after study has shown that people of color are disproportionately impacted far more than whites. And these stops, you know, can lead too often to confrontation, humiliation, even violence. Here's attorney and public defender Brian Kennedy. He's with the group Justice Forward Virginia. He's worked on this issue for years.
You know, my clients or people I know live knowing that police have unchecked power to detain them, to make them late, to put their hands in their pockets, to search them, to get them sit on the side of the road, handcuff them, search their vehicles. And it erodes the trust that communities have with police officers. And it has an impact on, you know, people's psyches.
Okay, Eric, the first step seems like tackling this overreach that, as you say, has long been a focus of police reformers. All the things that you laid out for us, the busted taillights, expired tags, or running a stop sign, those all still need to be pointed out and fixed, though. So how are some states addressing this balance between ensuring public safety on the roads and pretexts that are just that, pretexts?
Yeah. Well, I think some states are asking, you know, big questions. Should police with guns be enforcing minor traffic infractions? What restrictions or limits can be imposed? You know, take Virginia and Oregon. They're among the states that have really taken the lead on this. They're trying to sort of change the dynamic around the traffic stop. One law that just took effect last month, the Virginia legislature has put some limits on really the most notorious, you know, pretext stops, you know, objects in the rear view, a busted light, even the smell of marijuana, which is, you know, often used by police. I smell pot. I'm going to search the car now. But the law just took effect in March, just a few weeks ago, so it's really too soon to know what impact there it's having. And Oregon imposed some limits when the state Supreme Court ruled that, you know, police really have to keep their questions and conversations with drivers to the traffic infraction at hand and not ask these totally, you know, unrelated questions about guns or drugs. But it's sort of early days there in Oregon, too, and there hasn't yet to be a wide, you know, study or review.
What are you hearing from police associations about these types of changes?
You know, some police say, look, this is legal. The Supreme Court has upheld. This is not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. They say it's an important tool and it's among their most dangerous. So they continue to defend it as a, you know, an important tool in the toolbox for law enforcement.
There's also a shadow of doubt looming over all of these big changes to policing in America, a worry that, say, 2 or 3 years down the road after we're in the midst of this talking about George Floyd's killing, that nothing substantial will actually come from these proposals. I have just about a minute with you, but how are advocates working to keep this momentum going?
I think it's a big challenge. Some cities have tried to impose reforms, and they're running into state-level restrictions on what you can turn over to civilians, unarmed civilians, like Berkeley, California, Oakland, California, Los Angeles are looking at how do we change the dynamic? Well, there are state-level restrictions, and before you change, you know, the state law, nothing's going to change. And there is a fear, you know, is this moving too slowly? But I would say this. In my reporting, you know, there are two reform efforts that really have the most promise to reduce violence and profiling. One is to sort of rethink the traffic stop fundamentally, and two, sort of change how police respond to people in a mental health or substance abuse crisis. There are some pilot programs underway in Denver and San Francisco. Tanya, they show promise. These reforms, I think, have the potential to make some change.
NPR national correspondent Eric Westervelt, as always, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.